Welcome to episode 509 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show that puts you in control of your favorite movies, music, shows, and games. Josh, how you doing?
I'm doing really well. I feel like my life is absolutely chaotic and insane, but my mood is good. Physically, I'm doing well, so I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, too. And we have a bunch to go through because we missed a week again.
Yeah.
Because there wasn't a whole lot last week, but this week, the news caught up. So let's dive right into it. We don't have any feedback from our listeners this week. What's that all about?
What is that all about? Maybe our listeners can write in and tell us what that's all about. And then we would have feedback. Maybe. I don't know. So they can do that in a couple of different ways. If email is your preferred weapon, entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com, or use the contact form on the website. Twitter's also fun, but all the rest of our contact information will be on the show notes over at thedigitalmediazone.com, or we'll go through a bunch of it at the end of the show. So no listener feedback, but we do have a story that was so important. It rose to the level of featured story. So important, at least in the eyes of one of the hosts of the show.
Yeah, that would be me, because this, I think, is the most important thing that we have learned in the last week. Netflix finally is going to let you turn off those friggin' annoying auto preview videos that you get every time you hover over a tile in the Netflix app. Finally!
Oh, man. People, like, I want our listeners to get an idea of just how excited you were for this. Last week, when this got announced, Richard messaged me and was like, "Hey, we've got huge news for the next episode of Entertainment 2.0.
Right. And then you're like, "Oh, yeah, but I don't think there's anything else to report on. So maybe not so much of an episode."
Right. This is exciting. It's great from a usability perspective, but it's really not that big a news.
It isn't that big of a deal from a news perspective, but I think this makes a huge difference to your overall customer experience as a customer or user of Netflix. This autoplay thing is something that plagues every single streaming application or service because their marketing people think it's a good idea. And clearly, they must have the numbers to support that. However, they're starting to get lots of feedback from many annoyed customers, and that's a good thing. So always send feedback. Always complain if you think there's something that could be improved. Be nice about your complaints. I can be acerbic. Be nice.
And maybe don't just complain. If you have positive feedback, you could share that too, and it would make their lives, they would be happier.
Yeah, and we know that firsthand. We love getting positive feedback. We love getting negative feedback, too, because it helps us improve, but it motivates us
right to
get positive feedback. So yep, that's always good, too. Yeah, so this is really, really easy. All you have to do is, when you're logged in, go to the web, log into your account, go to My Profile, and under the account under My Profile, you'll see playback settings. Select that. And there used to be one option there, which was to be able to enable or disable the autoplay next episode. Jeez, I disabled that, I think, years ago. Now there's a second option where you can disable autoplay previews. That is the second checkbox. It's probably checked by default for most people. Go ahead and deselect that if you do not want autoplay previews. I'm so happy about this, if for no other reason that I watch TV late at night. And when I'm just surfing around trying to find something to watch, I don't want some loud video coming on if I don't even know what it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, there's a lot of reasons why this makes sense. I want to rewind a little bit here. You don't have it autoplay the next episode?
Oh, hell no. No. Absolutely
not. You don't know how
to
binge Netflix, my man.
No. I do know how to binge. I am in control. I press the select button to go to the next episode if I want to. Josh, you don't understand. I watch late night television. Do you know how many nights I fall asleep in front of the television while I'm watching? I did that last night.
Okay, that's a good reason. You've redeemed yourself. That's a good reason.
Yeah, and I don't want to have to buy those, whether they're ever going to come to be Netflix socks trademark that monitor whether you're asleep or awake.
That would be cool. All right, well, now for the rest of the kind of actual news, I guess.
Yeah, so. I mean, you know, we have other video news tonight and audio news and gaming news. Why don't I take the video news? Because I think most of this stuff is things that I've been following and you can pretty much catch everything else.
Right. It works for
all
me.
All right. So everybody knows that the Viacom-CBS merger is complete. Everybody knows that, right? They're now known as, awkwardly, Viacom-CBS, parentheses, ugh. Okay, so this combined company is now presumably going to be launching a new streaming service. And we've talked about this in the past. We knew that Viacom was going to be launching a streaming service. So now that they're a combined company, we had figured, and all signs had been pointing to the probability that Viacom's plans for streaming and CBS's existing CBS All Access service would become one. Nope. That is apparently not what the press thinks is going to happen now. Now, I don't know why the press is reporting on this. Josh, are you aware of the impetus for this at all?
No. I don't get all of this.
Like, I don't believe that Viacom has come out with any sort of official announcement to this effect, but according to The Verge and other outlets, we're going to see a new Viacom CBS streaming service for $10 a month. In addition to CBS All Access.
Right. It doesn't make any sense.
I don't get it. I don't get it. And the possibility of a combined Viacom and CBS streaming service is really impressive. I might be willing to actually pay for that, as opposed to where we are now, where I don't want to have to pay for CBS All Access. And arguably, there are people who are paying for it, but it's not doing as well as CBS might have hoped. CBS has reported that they have 10 million streaming subscribers. Oh, but by the way, that includes everyone that has subscribed to Showtime over the top.
Right.
Wait, what? So that is way less than anybody else's numbers. If you're looking at Disney or Hulu or Netflix or anything like that, in terms of the streaming services that people are already paying for, it's at least less than half of what everybody else has as subscribers.
So you said that you might be willing to sign up for a Viacom CBS service, but not CBS All Access. Why would you go with the other one?
Because I think Viacom brings more content. It's kind of like Hulu, right? So Hulu initially was a combination of multiple brands, multiple networks. It was NBC, ABC, and in addition to Fox, it also included some CW content and some of their ancillary networks. That is not the case for CBS. CBS is just CBS content. And so to expand that beyond just buying one, you know, paying for one network's content, at a price that in most cases is higher than what you pay for everything that Hulu offers, then I'd have to see more there. And I think Viacom offers more. Viacom has more networks, more brands. Viacom brings the Paramount network into the fold, which is important. Paramount, by the way, one of the companies that's still not playing with Movies Anywhere, but that's a different issue.
Forgot about that.
So I think that adds more value and makes it more viable. Now, $10 is still a lot to pay for a service like that when you can, you know, you can get a premium service for $10. I could get Showtime, for example, for $10. I could get Stars for $10. I'm more willing to pay for them for $10 than I am some network.
But this would probably be more more quantity of content than Showtime.
Arguably, yes. And the interesting thing here is that people at one point were under the impression, and by people, I mean the press was at one point under the impression that this Viacom CBS service, this new service, would probably combine the best of CBS, well, everything in CBS All Access, and the best of Showtime, as well as stuff from Paramount and other Viacom properties like MTV and those other Viacom brands. I don't know. I don't know what to expect here. If they're coming out with something that is in addition to CBS, I don't see how this and CBS both succeed. If anything, I think this hurts the CBS service. Because where am I going to spend my $10? Where I can get everything that Viacom offers or just the stuff that is or was at some point on CBS?
Right. Yep. That makes sense.
It's weird. It's so weird.
Yeah.
I hope they figure this out.
Do it. Yeah. Because it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to have two of them.
Yep. Agreed. All right. Well, next up, we have talked about Apple TV. Apple TV is one of the services that is trying to consolidate content from multiple sources. And I use Apple TV and I use the Apple TV app and I'm pretty happy with it. I think they do a fairly good job. They're probably doing a better job than most at this point in time. Finally, the Apple TV app is now available on last year's LG OLED TVs.
That's the model of the year you have, right?
No. No. I have a 2016.
2016?
LG OLED TV. But here's the thing that's really crazy for me that I don't understand. It's all WebOS. And I'm still getting updates. And I believe, I could be wrong, but I believe that my version of WebOS that I'm running is the same version that the LG 2019 TVs are running. But I don't get Apple TV on my LG TV.
This might not be a software problem. It could be a hardware problem.
It could be. It could be not capable enough.
Yeah. I mean, like you think about the older Sonos devices not being able to support AirPlay 2.
Wow. That's a really good point. Something that I talked about very recently on the Smart Home Show. Shameless plug. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a really good point. It could be a hardware issue, and that's entirely possible. We know, though, that other vendors, and specifically your TV manufacturer, has come out with Apple TV on like four past years of TVs. I think back to 2016. I think they went 2016, 17, 18, and 19.
You might be right. I don't remember what year now my Vizio TV is, but it at least has AirPlay now because my daughter will frequently, whatever it is that Apple calls that technology,
yep,
mirror AirPlay. her iPad's screen onto our TV. So
yeah,
I don't know if that's AirPlay 2. I think she's got an ancient iPad. It's from her school, so it's... I don't know if any of that makes any difference because I'm not entrenched in the Apple ecosystem. But yeah, my TV's kind of old at this point, and It might be the same year as yours. I think we both got our TVs around the same time. Yeah, I think we
did the same year. So it, you know, it's interesting. It's frustrating. This is what happens when you're, you know, and I wasn't a crazy early adopter on OLED. I waited a little while because there were stores that were showing these things before I had one. And usually I'm way up there on the TV thing, but... But yeah,
but it's not to it's the point of buying them when they were $10,000 right. for a
like you don't see me going out and buying an 8K TV. Don't do it. Just don't go and do right. it. Don't do it.
This is going to be our advice for a long time, folks.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. All right. So anyway, bottom line, if you have the 2019 TVs, you're going to you if you haven't already done the update, then you should because it will add the Apple TV app to your experience. And of course, all of the new 2020 TVs are going to have this already available. You don't have to do any separate update to get it.
Cool. Very cool. All right. Well, let's move on to a little bit of audio news. And we don't always, I mean, we tend to try to steer away from rumors and stuff, but this seems pretty likely. So, sources from sources reporting to the folks over at 9to5 Google are saying that a long awaited and much loved feature from Google Play Music is maybe finally going to come to YouTube Music really soon. And you know, I think The Verge had an article where the headline was like the best feature from Google Play Music finally coming to YouTube Music, and I was like, well, I can't even remember what that might have been.
That's such a Verge headline.
It is. But they're right. It is the best feature that's coming. But the fact that I couldn't remember what it was tells you just how long it's been since, you know, this has really been a thing. So what is that feature? It actually is a feature that predates Google Play Music as a service. Way back in like 2012 or 2013 when Google Music, because they've renamed all of these things about 100 times, was a thing. It was a service that would allow you to upload your MP3s to Google Drive and stream them to your Android device and through a web browser and all that stuff.
Yep.
They have eventually included that in Google Play Music. But then when they started making the big switch over to YouTube Music, that feature didn't come along for the ride. It was more like Spotify. You know, where you can stream whatever they have, but if you have music that isn't in their library, you can't listen to it. That is now supposedly coming very soon, like with maybe within the next couple of months to YouTube Music. And for a lot of people, I think they're like, who cares? Why does this matter? I think a lot of our listeners are the types of people who this will matter for.
Right.
Because our listeners are the types of people who have decades of music that they've ripped from CDs and stuff like that.
Are you saying that our listeners are old, Josh?
No, but some of them like older music, and some of the older music that was really good still isn't, or for a long time, wasn't available on Spotify and some of these other streaming services.
This is true, but you should admit it, we're old.
We are old. Yeah, we're super old. One of us is older than the other, though, so...
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway, but if you want it, like, for a long time, Led Zeppelin wasn't on any of those services.
Right.
The Beatles weren't on any of those services. So if you wanted to listen to those things, you couldn't use those services. So if that sort of music that is, you know, super restricted and not available in these types of services is really important to you and is stuff that you listen to frequently, then this could be reason enough to get you to switch services. You know, if you're a Spotify user, you might be listening to this and thinking, yeah, I would switch to YouTube to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, keep an eye out on that. We will obviously be keeping an eye for this. I think it's going to be a big deal for a certain niche of the music loving community out there.
I think this is a cool thing. What's interesting is that both Amazon and Microsoft also offered this feature at one point in time. Both of them pulled it back. Now, Microsoft, for different reasons, because Microsoft was ultimately abandoning music as a marketplace.
Yeah.
But Amazon no longer offers this. I use this as a way of accessing my entire music library through Apple Music.
Right. Yeah.
So I love this feature, and I'm very happy to see that they're offering it, because it means that they're not abandoning, frankly, what I might argue to be, I'm going to get hate mail for this, true music lovers, like people who have collected music over the years.
Yeah, I don't know that I would say that that's what makes you a true music lover, but I get what you're trying to say.
Yep.
Yeah. I think our listeners will show you grace and understand what you were trying to say there.
Please, no hate mail, please. Yeah.
I mean, I'm a huge music lover, and I never listen to my old collection of music, because pretty much everything I want is on Spotify.
Mm.
So,
okay.
I mean, there's some things that I own that aren't, but they aren't things that are, you know, monumentally important to me. So it's not a big deal.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to a little bit of gaming news. And there is an Xbox story, but I decided not to put it first. I think this other story is kind of bigger.
What?
Yeah, I think it is bigger because it's relevant right now. So NVIDIA has, so obviously makers of the most popular graphics cards available for computers for years now, has also had a service available in beta for years called GeForce Now. And it's basically Project X Cloud or Google Stadia. It's similar to that. It is games running in the cloud, and you're just streaming the video and all that stuff down to your machine, which means that you don't need a crazy powerful computer or anything to play these, because this service runs on lots of different devices, low powered Windows, Macs, NVIDIA Shield TV, Android devices. And this version that's now publicly available, that's kind of the news here, it will even be coming to Chrome OS soon. So you can play high-end PC video games streamed through the cloud to whatever. So just like Project X Cloud, at least from that standpoint. What's different about all of this is it's streaming from PCs, and they don't offer the games. Like, NVIDIA is not giving you a store to buy games from. NVIDIA doesn't have a collection of games that you pay a monthly subscription to access. None of that. You're essentially remoting into a computer and then accessing your Steam library, your Epic Store library, those types of things, and then streaming right from there. A lot of the games have instant play functionality, but a lot of them don't, which does mean that you would have to manually install them for a one-time play session. And I don't know how long that takes, because these games can be massive. But maybe if it's just copying internally amongst their cloud network, maybe it's not too slow. So I want to play with that more to find out how slow that might potentially be. But on the surface, it sounds like, oh, great, I've got a massive Steam library. I've got all of these games in Epic and I don't know, other various stores that I could access anywhere now. That sounds fantastic. Well, you don't have access to absolutely everything. The publishers do still need to play nicely with this service. And during the beta period, there were games from all sorts of different publishers. But for some reason, right when the service launched last week, Square Enix, EA, Rockstar, a lot of their games not available. You can't play Red Dead Redemption 2. You can't, you know, games like that not available right now. They just dropped off, and we don't know why. And then today, just before we started recording, Activision Blizzard said, "Yeah, we're out too." So, no Overwatch, no Call of Duty. I'm kind of blanking on, you know, some of the other games, but none of the Activision Blizzard content is there either. So don't really know what's going on there, but if NVIDIA can get all of that stuff working, which in some ways is the harder part, like You trust NVIDIA on the technology side. The licensing, that's the sticky part. So the next question, of course, is how much does all of this cost? Well, they offer two tiers. There's a free tier where you can just play whenever you want. And it makes sense that it's free because you're already buying the games, right? So it's already games you own. The downside to the free tier is you can only play for an hour at a time, and there's only so many servers, so you may need to wait in line for your turn to play. There's also a Founders Edition, which has an introductory price of $5 a month for the first 12 months. In that tier, you're going to get priority access to the queues to get in, and you can play for up to 6 hours at a time, which seems like it should be enough. You can also turn on their RTX technology. That's the ray tracing stuff. So that's really cool because it'll look amazing. And if you buy into the Founders Edition, you also get a 90-day free trial. So that's all awesome. Eventually, that price will go up, but they haven't said when. Well, I mean, it'll be after a year for you. And they haven't said how much. But for $5 a month, might be worth it. But there's a free tier, so you can try it for free and see how well it works for you.
Founders Edition? That sounds really familiar. Weird. So I guess the thing
what
that
does it sound familiar to? Because I mean, can tell you what it's actually
pretty
from.
Pretty much what Stadia is doing?
I don't remember what Stadia called it, but NVIDIA has always called the first generations of their video cards, that the ones that they actually make, they call those Founders Edition.
Okay, so maybe, I mean, I'm not going to suggest or not to Google's attorneys that maybe they stole that, but maybe they did.
But, maybe.
But I guess the question that I have is it either 1 hour sessions, which clearly isn't enough for any serious gamer, or this Founders Edition thing? Like, is that, are those the options? You either those pay or you don't.
Exactly.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah. So I think that this service is really, really smart. I love this idea. I've got a decent catalog of games in Steam and all of these other stores and stuff, but I don't have a great gaming computer anymore. And there are games that are coming out that are PC exclusives that I don't have a powerful enough computer to play them, but I want to play them. And this would enable me to play them. So, like, it's weird to say I'm going to go and buy this game that I could play on my computer and instead stream it from someone else's computer, because that's what the cloud is. Cloud just means someone else's computer. I really love this idea. I think like I could see this being the way that console gamers get into PC gaming, because they can play anywhere on anything and not have to buy a $1,500 gaming computer.
Yeah, it boggles my mind that we're at the point where latency, or lack of latency rather, has overtaken the capabilities of many PCs.
Yeah, it's kind of nuts. It's kind of nuts. So that's GeForce Now. I'm definitely going to be trying to check this out a little bit more over the next couple of weeks to see how well this works for me, to see what it looks like if the game that you want to play is not available as one of these instant play titles. And I'll definitely be keeping an eye on those licensing agreements with all of those other publishers. So more info on that in the future, I think. So Xbox, I said I had an Xbox story for you. In the last few weeks, really going back to the Video Game Awards at the beginning of December, when Microsoft unveiled what the next Xbox, the Series X, looks like, people have been wondering, what are the ports look like on the back? And then a couple weeks ago, we finally got to see, what does it actually look like on the back? And all of the ports made sense. You know, there's an HDMI and Ethernet and, you know, all that stuff that you would expect, except there was this weird, thin, rectangular one, and no one really knew what it was. And a lot of people were just guessing it's some sort of diagnostic port on the dev kits. Like, it probably won't even be there on the version that we're all going to run out and buy in November. when this thing comes out. Paul Thurrott over at Thurrott.com says he has sources that say, no, this isn't a diagnostic port. This is a port for storage expansion.
Mm.
So that's kind of a big deal and interesting. So the next Xbox, the Series X, is going to have NVMe-based storage. It's not just going to be an off-the-shelf NVMe drive, though. They've got some other crazy technology that's going to make load times insanely fast. So, like, super short load times. So how do we expand that? Because NVMe drives typically aren't super big, and games are getting enormous. Like I've mentioned previously, I got the latest Call of Duty for Christmas. You know how big that game is, Richard? Want to take a guess?
I don't. I don't even know how to guess.
It's 140 gigs.
Okay. I probably would have been off by several orders of magnitude.
Right. Right. At the beginning of this generation, the original Xbox One came with a 500 gig hard drive. And a lot of people were like, that's kind of small, but they did allow you to use USB 3 hard drives and expand it and stuff. And yeah. Performance was about the same. And now if you were to get an Xbox One X, it's a 1 terabyte hard drive, you know, so it's better, but it's still not great because these games are getting huge.
Right.
And
I have a 2 gig expansion or 2 terabyte expansion on even my One S.
Right.
But the largest game that I think I have is like maybe 60 gig.
Yeah, so, I could see that.
Wow.
Yeah. But like it's not uncommon for them to be 70, 80, 90 gigs nowadays. And as we move into this next generation, of course, every game is going to have 4K textures. So they're way bigger. Like it's going to be the standard now that all games are over 100 gigs,
right.
At least all of the big name games. And how much storage can they reasonably put in a consumer priced console at launch? Like, I don't think we're going to get more than a terabyte. I think that's what we're going to get. And that's not really going to be enough. So expansion makes a lot of sense. But if you just take your off-the-shelf 4 terabyte USB 3 hard drive and connect it, the experience won't be anywhere near the same as the internal drive.
Right. It won't be fast enough.
Exactly. Yeah. So a reader over at Thurrott did some digging and like somehow using the pictures of the thing, like figured out, you know, pretty detailed estimates for how big this port is, and then did some more digging on like LinkedIn postings and stuff about, you know, hiring people for the Series X and determined that it could very well be a CF Express port. I didn't even know CF Express was a thing. That's
right.
Compact Flash Express. I thought Compact Flash went the way of the dodo years ago.
Right, right.
But apparently didn't. Apparently it's still a thing. I imagine it's a thing for like really high-end video cameras and stuff like that, I imagine. But he said that a half terabyte, you know, a 500 gig Compact Flash Express card is like $600. Like that could be what the Series X cost.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I'm wondering if there's going to be like some sort of device that they're going to put out, or maybe this already exists because I don't know anything about CF Express, that would allow you to take like an NVMe type hard drive or, you know, some of these other really, really fast SSDs and just have a little adapter that connects through CF Express. I have no idea if any of this is possible. Like there are people who know way more about, you know, bit rates of all of these different types of storage products out there and stuff than I do. But outside of that, I can't think of a way that you expand the storage on these next gen consoles in a way that's actually enjoyable.
And this makes sense if it's true. This is really cool.
Yeah.
You know, a funny anecdote for you and our listeners, CF, by the way, if you don't remember this, CF stood for Compact Flash. A little bit ironic considering that we now have like, I don't know, pinky sized right. micro SD cards that I'm desperately worried about losing track of.
Because compact flash cards were like bigger than credit cards.
Well, no.
Weren't they?
No. Compact flash cards were about like maybe half the size of a credit card. You're thinking of the card that would go in the side of a computer.
Right. Yes, the PCM CIA cards. Right. Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
The well-named PCM CIA card. I'm impressed that you remembered that. But the Compact Flash card was about half that, and about half the depth as well, about half the thickness. And I have one of those that had a physical hard drive in it that stored a whopping 4 megabytes of information.
Wow. I mean, that saved you from carrying around a couple of floppies.
Yeah. And it was for a camera. I mean, that was more storage than you could possibly imagine putting in a camera at the time.
Yeah, right. So I'm real curious to see what they're going to do, because I really don't think that we're going to get more than a terabyte of storage on the Series X or the PlayStation 5, because it's just too expensive to go to 2. In 2 years, they'll release consoles that have 2 terabytes, but right now they won't. So what are we going to do? Because storing like 8 games on your Xbox is going to be a little annoying.
Yep.
So hopefully, hopefully soon we'll know.
Yeah. We're just not there on the bandwidth thing yet.
No. Like, man, it took so long to install Call of Duty. So long. All right. To close out the gaming section, we now know the free PlayStation Plus games for the month of February. Well, we ought to. It's the 11th of February, but the last episode we recorded was the day before they announced them. So you actually are getting 3, but kind of 5 games for free from PlayStation Plus this month. Kind of 5, because the first one is BioShock the Collection, which is 3 games in 1. So it's BioShock 1, BioShock 2, and BioShock Infinite, all very highly reviewed games. So definitely worth checking those out. The Sims 4, it feels like this game has been out for like 15 years. It wouldn't surprise me if someone said, actually, it has been 15 years. Everyone knows what that is at this point. And then the other one,
it's way, way, way more than the Sims 4 or Sims in general.
Oh, Sims in general has been around.
Sims
since
in general
90s.
Is like decades.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. The last one, they're doing 3 games this month, which is not the norm. They're including a PlayStation VR title called Firewall Zero Hour. And this is a 4v4, you know, 4-person versus 4-person, first person tactical shooter. So it sounds to me kind of like Rainbow Six Siege as a first person game. It sounds cool, and getting free PlayStation VR games is got to be quite a benefit if you paid all the money for PlayStation VR. So there you go. There's your 3/5 free PlayStation games for the month of February.
That's cool. You didn't mention Games with Gold, and I know that's because we don't know the new info yet, but...
No, I did. Remind, we covered it all last time.
I know, but that was like... You know, 2 weeks ago, we should remind people that even though Hallmark desperately wants you to pay attention to the people that you love this weekend, you should also make sure that you've downloaded the games that are no longer going to be available as of the 15th of February.
Yeah, so that would be Batman the Telltale series on Xbox One and Fable Heroes on Xbox 360.
Yep.
Yeah. Actually, here's a better tip. If you are going to be ignoring your loved ones this weekend and wanting to play something cool on Xbox or PC this weekend, there's a beta for a new game coming out called, wow, I'm totally blanking on the name of it. I'll have it in a second here. I think it's a 4-player multiplayer, you know, action game, sort of like Overwatch. But it's all melee. Here we go. It's called Bleeding Edge, and it's technically a closed beta this weekend, but if you have Xbox Game Pass, then you can get access. It's Friday through Sunday. You can pre-install the game if you're listening to this on Thursday, so that you'll be ready for it. I'm really excited about Bleeding Edge, despite the fact that I couldn't remember the name of it. I think this is going to be a lot of fun. So go and check that out too this weekend.
Cool. And that is going to wrap our news for this episode. So now it's time to talk about what is going on in our entertainment centers. And it's been 2 weeks and I have been doing a lot of catching up.
All right.
Part of that is on the hardware side and on the services side. So let's start there. I ordered a new Fios router. I think I talked about this a couple of episodes ago, and that has been installed now. Now, this is really cool because it gets me from having 50, what is it, megabits, I guess, to 60 something.
Wow, quite a jump there, Richard.
Yeah, I did the test this afternoon. It was supposed to be 200. I'm paying for 200. So it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out, because what I learned when they came to install it, and the installer was just delightfully candid and frustrated by the whole experience, was that they didn't tell me that the new router has to be located within like with an Ethernet connection to the NIC, to the network connection that they have coming in from outside. That's in my basement. My router used to be in my attic, which is connected only by coax.
Oh.
And the new router has to be connected by Ethernet to all their stuff that comes into the house.
That makes sense.
It kind of does. Kind of. Now, I could have had it use their coax if I had bought yet another device that would be their version of a MoCA converter.
Right.
But instead, I used my existing MoCA converters, which has brought my overall performance of my network down dramatically from what I'm actually paying for. So I'm kind of frustrated about this. The good news, if there is good news, is that overall, this router, even though I have to pay for it, I either had to rent it or I had to buy it up front, and I decided to buy it, as opposed to the router that I've had for the last 6 years, which I had for free. This still gives me better service than I had before, and the service that I get as a monthly charge ends up being less.
Well, that's cool.
I don't know why.
Yeah,
but that's good.
Doesn't make sense, but it's cool.
Right. Now, speaking of services, I had an email message from Amazon, and I don't know about anybody else that's an Amazon customer, but it's probably likely that you get an email message from Amazon every friggin' day. So I might not pay attention to all of them. And apparently I wasn't, because it turns out that for the past 2 years, I have been paying Amazon $20 a year to store photos in the Amazon Photo service.
I thought that was free with Prime.
Right. It is. And I'm a Prime customer. And they don't bother to reconcile that for you.
Yikes.
So I was still paying $20 a year for Amazon photo storage that they must have opted me into from some other thing that I was using at the time. Maybe, I don't know, on some Amazon Fire Kindle device, I took a screen cap at some point and it ended up in their storage service. And so I was paying for that. Yikes. So my advice to anybody that has Amazon devices and Amazon Prime is to see if you are in fact paying for Amazon photo storage, because that is, frankly, the biggest, and I know this is a loaded term, scam I've seen in a while. All right. I've watched a lot of television. 2 weeks have gone by. Superstore, Connors, The Usuals, The Good Place, finale. Josh, you watched The Good Place finale?
Of course I watched The Good Place finale.
It was good.
That's it?
I didn't think it was as good as the episodes that preceded it. I thought 11 and 12 were amazing. I thought 11 and 12 redeemed the season. I don't think 13 lived up to that.
They're different. And I thought it wrapped it up fairly well. And I think it absolutely had the right amount of heart tugging. I mean, that was, there were some very
That's true.
Sad moments.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. No, I'll give you that. I'll give you that. So, you know, it was good. I wanted that to go out so much better because it was, that series was so good. And I'm so glad that you convinced me to watch it because I have thoroughly enjoyed it. I am caught up on This Is Us in New Amsterdam, now waiting for new episodes. I finished season 5 of The Flash and season 7 of Arrow. By the way, speaking of heart-tugging moments, holy crap, the last 10 minutes of each of those episodes were just like ballers. They were just tugging at everything and every character that you, not every, but the characters that you have come to know and love in those respective shows. So I'm finally ready to start the final season of Arrow, which is now ended, and Flash going forward. Looking forward to that. Speaking of tugging at all the right places, I started the series called Dogs on Netflix. This is a really interesting season, or series rather, that has since announced that they will have a second season. This is 6 episodes about the different jobs that dogs have in humans' lives. And it's fascinating. It's really fascinating. So as a dog owner and lover, this is something that I eventually had to watch. And I thoroughly recommend it to anybody that's interested in this kind of thing, like service dogs and dogs that kind of help humanity as a greater cause. We are about halfway through Grace and Frankie, season 4. We finished The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, part 2. I believe if they run this the way they did the past parts or seasons or whatever they're calling them now, there will be a second drop of episodes to complete part 2 probably in about 7 or 8 months. So I'm looking forward to that. I keep forgetting that I watch Saturday Night Live stuff. I don't really watch Saturday Night Live anymore, but I go to YouTube all the time to see the highlights from Saturday Night Live. I usually watch the cold open, and I usually watch the nightly news or whatever the weekly news, whatever they call it. And so that's something that we've been keeping up on, and it's been very funny as the political debates and elections have been going on. They've been kind of, and of course the impeachment stuff. So they've been capitalizing on all of that. I've watched the second and third episodes of Picard, and oh my God, this series is so, so good. If you are a next generation viewer, fan, lover, this is something you will absolutely love. And I mentioned before that I was kind of watching this with, if you will, friends that were also watching it. But I wasn't able to do that for whatever reason this past week. So in a moment of desperation, I signed up for a CBS All Access free trial on Apple TV, which ends as of this recording tomorrow. So I will be canceling that so that I don't have to pay CBS any money for this. But I didn't want to miss the last week's episode. Oh, this is so good. This series is so, so good. I am really impressed by what they're doing. I also decidedly added Showtime to my Apple TV service so that I could watch a show that I'm surprised isn't on your lineup, Josh.
Really?
And that's Homeland.
You're surprised? I didn't know that it started already.
Oh, you are like the biggest Homeland fanboy I know.
I do really love that show.
And I can't believe you didn't know the new season started. And the season premiere was this past Sunday. It was wonderful. And so I will be subscribing to Showtime on Apple TV as an add-on channel for $10 a month for probably the next month or 2 or 3 months, I believe. I think it's 10 episodes. And while I'm doing that, I'll probably also watch Shameless because I believe that that has already started for the season. So, yeah, I'm really excited about that. And so far, it even in that first episode, it delivered. We watched the movie Terminator Dark Fate. I know that didn't do well in the theaters. I really enjoyed it. I thoroughly enjoyed this movie. If you're someone who completely enjoyed Terminator 2 and has paid attention to the series both through TV and movies, I think this is something that you will like. So it's worth watching when it's available, either as a rental or when it comes on a cable service. Of course, lots of stuff on regular TV, political stuff, the Iowa caucuses, the State of the Union. Before we even started recording, I was watching returns from the New Hampshire primaries. And a day late, I watched a recorded shorter version of the Oscars without ads, because who cares about the ads on the Oscars? And that was okay. It wasn't great. It was okay. I always love seeing what they're doing with that theater in LA, because that's one of the most amazing theaters I've ever been in my life. So I love seeing events that are staged there. And that's it for stuff I've been watching. One more thing in my, I guess, entertainment center or home setup. I had a thought today, a random thought. I was thinking, maybe it's time to retire Windows Home Server and I should just get a Synology.
I don't think that's a terrible idea. I mean, how old is that hardware?
Well, right. So it's one of the, I don't even know what they called them. Like the mini boxes or whatever that everybody was modding. They bought them to mod. I built my own Windows Home Server box in this thing. And like the most that I can put on one drive is 2 terabytes. So I have to span drives to get anything larger than that with Microsoft's custom, not compatible with anything drive spanning technology. So yeah, it's probably time. What I'm going to have to figure out is that currently I use Windows Home Server for 3 things. Backups of Windows computers in my home, storage of common media or files that we share throughout the home. And it's also where I run my Wi-Fi backend service, my right. Unify service.
Yep.
So I'm going to figure, I have to figure out where to put that if it's not on there. Now I have another different box that runs Plex and a bunch of other stuff. So maybe I'll just move it to that. But yeah, I think it might be time. It's a 10-year-old box.
Yeah, you're on borrowed time.
Yeah, easily. Running Windows Home Server, 2011, I think.
Yeah, how much longer could that possibly be supported?
I don't think it is anymore.
Yeah, I've got the same sort of Unify setup where I needed to be running the software somewhere. I pulled a Raspberry Pi out of one of my drawers and got it running on a Raspberry Pi.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah.
Now, I have resisted doing that, but I do in fact have a random Raspberry Pi 3 just sitting in a drawer somewhere.
That's what this was. It's perfect for that. Yeah, do that. I guess. Or, yeah, I mean, run it on your Plex server or whatever. Yeah, that makes more sense, probably.
Yep. All right, Josh, that was it for me. A lot as usual. How about you? What have you been doing in your entertainment center?
Not nearly as much as I would like to be doing. In fact, I didn't even clean up all of my notes from the last time here. My life has been insane. I feel like I've barely been home. It's been 2 weeks since we've recorded, and I don't have any video games here.
Wow. Yeah. You have no video games and you have one TV show.
Yeah. That we already talked about. Yeah.
That we already talked about.
I watched the hour and a half long finale of The Good Place.
Hour and a half because there was basically a follow-on show.
Right. That wasn't very good.
Yeah. The best part of that was like the last 5 minutes.
Yeah. 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 It was. Yeah. The Good Place was great. I haven't watched any other TV shows. I haven't watched any other movies. There hasn't been football on. I think I've only watched like one hockey game. I've been.
Wait, there hasn't been any good football on, and we just had the Super Bowl. Oh, right. You're right. There wasn't any good football.
Yeah. And I thought about talking about Super Bowl, but I don't think anybody cares about the Super Bowl anymore. My one sentence description of the Super Bowl was the game was fine. The ads all sucked. And
oh, no, no. What? Okay. I have a question for you. This was not a Super Bowl ad. I don't think they played it for the Super Bowl, but did you see the Groundhog Day commercial?
Yeah. That one is fine, but I don't
that
have
was so good. For
I don't
Jeep.
Have the nostalgia that for that movie.
You're too young. That was so good.
Yeah, I guess.
It was so good.
So audiobooks, I've been keeping people up to date on what I've been doing there. I think the last time we talked, I was like, oh, I just got Rainbow Six and there's no way I'm going to finish this in time. And then like the next day I got Without Remorse off of being on hold at the library. And that is the first book in the Jack Ryan series.
Oh, nice.
Yes. So I've been waiting for a while to start that. And it's just as long as Rainbow Six. You know, it's like 35 hours or something like that.
Holy crap.
So I just returned Rainbow Six. I'm like, nope, I got to do this one instead. and I think I'm under 7 hours remaining with a few days left. So I think I am going to get it finished on time. And I've already read the next book, which is Patriot Games. So I'm almost done with this book. I don't understand how this is in any way related to the Jack Ryan stuff.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah. Like it takes place during the Vietnam War. The Jack Ryan stuff didn't happen until like the 90s.
Well, but doesn't he? No, I could be remembering this incorrectly. He has a back injury.
Yes.
Wasn't that from some combat prior to working for the agency?
It was, but Jack Ryan is not in this book.
Oh, interesting.
Weird. About three quarters of the way through the book, they mentioned somebody with the last name of Ryan. So I'm wondering if it's Jack Ryan's dad. But he's like a psychologist. I just don't know enough about Jack Ryan to know. So, it's been fine. I have not loved this book, but I want to finish it. So I am. And then on the last episode that we talked about, I mentioned a concert I went to, and I went to another concert. So this is my first time ever going to one of those big, huge stadium shows. Went up to Little Caesars Arena where the stupid Detroit Red Wings play and saw the Lumineers, and it was really, really, really cool. So I love the Lumineers. I've loved them for years, and it was awesome. That was a Christmas present from Jen, so we got to go and do that, and it was great.
I love that you go and see all of these bands and groups that I've never heard of in my life.
You don't listen to enough folky kind of music.
No, I don't listen to anything, anything folky.
Well, that's your problem, Richard.
I don't know that that's a problem.
It is your problem. So that's it for me. Hopefully things are going to change and I'm going to get to spend a little bit more time on my couch watching things and playing video games. But I don't know if that's going to happen over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry your life is so crazy, but take a breather every once in a while.
I would like to. All right. So that's it for me. I think you've got an announcement to share.
Yeah, just real quickly, before we're out of here, I think everybody knows that I'm a big space geek. And about a year and a half ago, I had the opportunity to join a bunch of people through NASA's social outreach program at the Kennedy Space Center and watch a launch and get to see all of these behind the scenes spaces and experiences there. One of the people that I met there, Chuck Fields, has a podcast I've been listening to for a while now. And I think I've mentioned this on the show in the past. It's called, I can't even remember what it's called, like something, your coffee break or something. I feel really bad. Sorry, Chuck. So he started another new show because he's a big space geek, and it's specifically focused on the space topics, and it's called Your Space Journey. His first guest for his first episode was Jim Bridenstine, the director of NASA.
Whoa.
So, I mean, he gets really good guests on. And one of the things that Chuck is doing is incorporating people's stories in each episode, like a 2-minute blurb from different people that he knows about how they got interested in space and where they hope to see it going. And I was so like pleased that he asked me to participate in this. And the latest episode of Your Space Journey, the show, episode 7, has my recording of how I got interested in space. So if you're at all interested in hearing that, I highly recommend that you check out Chuck Fields' show, Your Space Journey. And this particular episode is fascinating because it's about a space hotel and a company that really exists today that is working on building, like their goal is to build a hotel in space.
That's cool.
That is really cool.
Also, his other podcast is called Your Online Coffee Break.
Your Online. Thank you. I feel really bad. Sorry, Chuck.
It's fine. I'm sure, sure he'll excuse you. Cool. That's amazing. I can't imagine starting a podcast and episode 1, getting the director of NASA.
Right.
That's amazing. All right. Way more amazing than this show. But so let's get the heck out of here. If you want to get a hold of us, we mentioned there's a lot of ways you can do that. They're all over at the show notes at thedigitalmediazone.com. But Twitter is a really fun way of getting a hold of us. Richard's handle is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard, and the website is at DigiMediaZone. Richard, you've got another podcast, yet another one that you didn't plug in the show, because you did plug one of your other podcasts earlier. This one is called Home On. What is going on with Home On?
Yeah, this one. So the last episode, of course, we talked about in the past, that was you and I kind of wrapping up what we saw at CES and what smart home stuff interested us there. Coming up in probably less than a week's time, we have the CEO of Olibra, and they are the makers of Bond Home. If you're not familiar with this product, this is a product that I recommend regularly on Home On, because it solves one of the biggest problems in connected homes today, which is connecting RF devices like shades and ceiling fans with your existing smart home infrastructure. So I'm really excited to talk with him. That'll be coming up in just a couple days. And then following that, just a little bit of a sneak that I have been working for literally over 2 years to try and line up this next company. And we finally have them committed to a date. So we will be talking with a, let's just say, a smart home company that I am very excited about welcoming to the show.
And it is a smart home company that everyone has heard of.
Yeah.
Everyone. Well,
I would assume so. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that. Cool. So we also like to point out that we record this show live. I'm still kind of getting the hang of doing this, all this video production stuff correctly, but I really appreciate everyone who's been showing up. And I want to toss a quick shout out to Rye Guy in the chat tonight. He's been a listener a long, long time, many, many years. Going back to the days of doing the show, I think he was a listener when I was doing the show live with Adam. He's been around for a while.
Wow.
And one thing has been incredibly consistent with him, and it is his love for the McRib. So if you want to chat about the McRib, you need to show up here Tuesday nights at 8:30
p.m. Wait. Is Rye Guy secretly James Montemagno?
No.
Because I know that James has a thing for the McRib.
I'm pretty sure they're not the same person.
Have you seen them in the same room together?
No, I haven't. But Rye Guy lives close enough to me that there's a possibility. So,
interesting.
Yeah, it's a possibility. So, all right, cool. So that's Tuesday nights, 8:30 p.m. Eastern, usually. But follow us on Twitter to find out exactly when we're going to be recording that show live. And come and check it out. Because that's going to do it for episode 509. He's Richard Gunther, and I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.